I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone. Thank you as ever for listening. It's a privilege to talk to you every week. I enjoy it more and more. Something to look forward to. I just seem to do more and more murder, Mo.
I know you do.
It's a lot of it about...
Or a Laura murder.
Yeah. Someone did ask me, actually, this week, how I managed it. I was in a car, and the driver said, "How do you manage all this?" And I said, "Well, it kind of happened to me." I didn't sort of set out thinking, "Oh, I tell you what, why don't we, you know?"
I don't know, become a specialist in true crime.
Hmm.
It's funny how your career can bend and flex, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've just takes my breath away, really. I think that the interesting psychological question is, don't let it prey on your mind.
Mm.
Because I think if you let it prey on your mind, it would be very damaging indeed. You have to see it, and I see it, as storytelling. And you're trying to recount something which is often very painful, and sometimes truly horrifying. But you can't allow yourself to bathe in it. You've got to try and take a step or two back,
mm-hmm.
which I hope we managed to do in this podcast.
Well, in the way that you tell the stories, for sure, but more to do with your own peace of mind.
Well, I think it would be fair to say that, yes, true crime's changed me, but I don't think it's changed me for the worse, or I don't think I've become more horrible, or, you know.
I was talking to someone about it. Like, I had dinner with my client, Barney, and we were talking about you, and I was saying how, like, when I was growing up, I remember very vividly when you were writing about Terence Rattigan. Oh, yeah, we were talking about Helen McCrory and Deep Blue Sea, because I just still can't get over how much I love that performance. And I said, and Barney's a big fan of Rattigan, and I said, oh, my dad wrote Rattigan's biography. He didn't know that. And I said, I remember very vividly when you were writing it, you would come in to lunch or, like, you know, come in from working, you know, and you tell us these fun stories about Bunny and so-and-so and, like, all these really fun stories.
Yeah.
And when you started writing about Fred West, there wasn't a nice vibe.
No.
You would come into lunch and say nothing.
No.
Just look pretty sad.
Yeah.
It was a very different thing. A
very different vibe.
Mm.
Yeah. I hope we managed, though, to make this podcast, our podcast, not genuinely horrifying. I hope we make it human.
I hope so too.
That's what we both seek to do.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes the people we're talking about are not in any way admirable.
No.
But this week I'm going to do a case I care about a great deal.
Do you?
Well, no, not this one.
Oh.
Sorry, not this one we're going to do. But
so
I'm confused. Working on another television documentary this week about...
Oh, yes, that's case, different.
A case I care about a great deal and have cared about a great deal since for 20 years, more than 20 years. And it involved a miscarriage of justice, which was absolutely indefensible. But today...
We're doing a case you don't know hugely well.
No, I have to say... I did struggle with this, but let's somebody...
Okay, so Steve Remington, who's one of our listeners, and he's a big metal music fan, and he asked us to do The Murder of Øystein Aarseth.
Øystein Aarseth.
Will we call it that? Or can we call it Euron what?
I think we call it what, which is the name he gave himself.
Mm.
Euronymous.
Euronymous.
From Mayhem.
Shall we just call it Euronymous?
Euronymous.
Well, here we go with Euronymous.
Yes. Øystein Aarseth was born on the 22nd of March 1968, and he was founder of the early Norwegian black metal band Mayhem. Now, there's a lot that is not known about Øystein Aarseth. Even all the established rock experts don't know very much about his childhood or his parents. They know he was clever. He's thought to have a brother, but that's never been confirmed. And originally, I mean, he started the band, this band that was eventually to be called Mayhem, at the age of 16. He was obviously precociously talented, the guitarist. He originally called himself Destructor. But then changed to Euronymous, based on Urinomos, which is in Greek mythology, is the spirit of a rotting corpse. I'm afraid the story doesn't get any jollier.
I've never really got the whole metal.
Absolutely.
It sounds very shouty to me.
He always wore black. He dyed his hair black. He wore knee-high black boots and a black biker jacket. And he painted his eyes with black
eyeliner.
Well, no, but like a diamond.
Oh, like those,
Joker.
Like Kiss, the band Kiss.
Yeah. And it was clearly partly inspired, but I don't think you can call it completely, by bands like Black Maiden or
Iron Maiden, is it?
We are coming across very cool right now.
Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath, yeah.
Ozzy Osbourne.
Yes.
Ozzy Osbourne, someone different.
He was a supporter of the Norwegian communist youth group Red Unglo as a teenager. He also collected Nazi memorabilia.
Sounds charming.
And in 1988, when he was 20, a boy called Per Olin became the band's vocalist. His name in the band was Dead.
Jeffrey's face is an absolute picture.
Anyway, Dead and Euronymous, by all accounts, didn't get on. In fact, at one point, Dead stabbed Euronymous with a knife when they were living together in a house that the band occupied near Krakstad in Norway. Now, I know nothing about Norwegian black metal, but what I do know is that the black metal bands, and this includes Euronymous, were much influenced by Satanism. And in particular, Euronymous was very keen that his followers should burn churches to the ground to spread grief and despair among Christians.
Quite a harsh message.
To say this left me somewhat bemused would be an understatement.
Baffled and bewildered.
Euronymous was also fascinated not just by Nazis, but also by dictatorships. And particularly, he liked Eastern Bloc memorabilia. Ceausescu of Romania. He's a great admirer of Eastern Bloc dictatorships. I can't, for the life of me, I suppose the music must be very compelling, but I've never heard it. But the relationship between Dead and Euronymous didn't get any better until in April 2000 and... Sorry, let me get the date right. In April... 1991, Dead was found dead by Euronymous. He'd slit his wrists and used a shotgun on his head. It was considered suicide, but here comes the sort of grisly bit. Euronymous proceeded to take photographs of the body and rearrange parts of it, and part of it became an album cover called The Dawn of the Black Hearts.
That's gross.
Euronymous used dead suicide, which he described in a message to a bandmate as, "Dead's done something really cool. He's killed himself." And he used the suicide to foster Mayhem's evil image. There were rumours that Euronymous had made a stew from Dead's brains. It wasn't true. But it was true that he did make necklaces with bits of Dead's bones, which he gave to other musicians he admired. It's absolutely true, but horrid as well. In the wake of Dead's death, Euronymous's obsession with all things satanic and evil began to grow even more, and Mayhem struggled to stay together, and he seemed to descend into some kind of fantasy world. But in 1991, in the summer, he opened a record store in Oslo called Helvete, which means hell in Norwegian, in Oslo, sorry, and also founded the independent record label Deathlike Silence Productions. And many musicians lived at the shop for extended periods of time. The walls were painted black, and the window displayed a polystyrene tombstone. This whole thing is, I find, bewildering, but never mind. It was the centre and the inspiration of what became the Norwegian black metal movement. Many became obsessed with Euronymous in the movement, and bands came and went. One band called Amputation became known as Immortal. Another one called Thou Shalt Not Suffer became Emperor. And old funerals gave way to Burzum, B-U-R-Z-U-M, whose guitar player was a man called Varg Vikernes, V-I-K-E-R-N-E-S, Varg Vikernes. As with Dead, the now past singer, Euronymous took Varg under his wing, but gradually, as it had with Dead, a rivalry developed between them. Varg was 5 years younger than Euronymous, but never mind, they started to compete to see who could be more evil. Euronymous actually probably liked the glamour more than anything else, but never mind. But then things started to progress. On the 6th of June 1992, a church in Bergen was destroyed by fire. An arsenal was certainly set by Varg. And a string of other churches and fires followed, perpetrated by fans and musicians from the black metal scene. Euronymous was present at the burning of the Holmenkollen Chapel, along with Varg and other musicians, and another musician called Faust. I'm not suggesting for a moment that Euronymous was the instigator here. I think he probably wasn't. One band member memorably said about him, "There were lots of smoke, but not much fire." He was all about creating images and fanning the flames, so to speak. But Euronymous and Varg both were calling themselves by this point satanic terrorists. Euronymous told Swedish radio that they wanted to spread grief and despair. "And that's a good thing," he said on the radio interview. Both men were arrested, but there were no charges were laid because there was lack of evidence. And so in January 1993, Euronymous was feeling the strain and decided to close Helvete, the record store. Incidentally, it was huge. It was a great big building, and they really only occupied the ground and the basement. And there is suggestion, although never confirmed, that he was perhaps under pressure from his parents. But we know nothing about his parents. Perhaps Steve would like to fill me in on the details.
Yeah, Steve might need to.
He might need to send me a note. Anyway, the animosity between Euronymous and Varg grew and grew. Until on the night of the 10th of August 1993, Varg stabbed Euronymous to death at his apartment in Oslo. Now, the details of what exactly happened are still sketchy. Varg insisted that Euronymous was planning to abduct him, torture him to death, and video it. There is also suspicion that Euronymous owed Varg quite a large sum of money in terms of royalty payments that had from the record label. We don't, the honest truth is we don't know. What we do know is that Euronymous's body was found in the stairwell of the apartment building with 23 stab wounds, 2 to the head, 5 to the neck, and 16 to the back. The death was initially blamed on Swedish black metal bands. Well, not true, of course. And on the 19th of August 1993, Varg was arrested. And his trial began on the 2nd of May 1994. Varg was convicted of murder, burning 3 churches and attempting arson of a 4th, as well as the theft and storage of 150 kilograms of explosives. That was the only charge he admitted to.
Where did he get those from?
The rumour was, and it was only a rumour, how do we can take the truth out of all this? They were going to blow up churches, so they'd stolen the explosives. I have no idea whether it was true. But on the day he was convicted, the day Varg was convicted, 2 churches were burnt down in Norway. And a cult developed around Euronymous's death.
I can imagine that happening.
He was hailed as the king or the godfather of black metal. Well, he was only 25. And you can sort of see how the cult would develop. But to be honest, I mean, I don't think you could hum a single tune. He was apparently a very fine guitarist. And it had a very good collection of guitars.
I do understand that you need to be very skilled to make those sort of discordant sounds.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've just never... I mean, I suppose I can understand that it would be sort of like a good release to be shouty and bang your heads and things like that. I just think... I just don't get it.
No, I'm afraid I don't either.
He was
a misanthrope. He was a Satanist. I don't think there's anything admirable about him at all, personally. But never mind, I can see how this particular...
Thing is, though, like, being a musician or, you know, sometimes it is about... Obviously, he's talented, but sometimes it is all about the show, isn't it?
It's all about the show, yes. Well, if you take a look at the pictures... He certainly has a very, very distinctive look. I once went to see Alice Cooper when I was still reviewing rock and roll, and he had a distinctive look too. I think I went to see him at the Royal Festival Hall in London. Believe it or not, I reviewed it for the Times.
Oh, I see, yeah. Yeah, it's just a very different world to...
Yes. I mean, you're not going to be able to hum a few bars of any of Euronymous's songs, are you?
No.
Hmm.
I don't think so. True mayhem. Gone but not forgotten. Wasted Narseth. He looks like a baby.
Hmm. Well, he is very young. If you're interested, Varg was released from prison in 2009.
Looks like an absolute baby.
Hmm.
Oh. there's this movie, Lords of Chaos, that's about this, is it?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
And Varg was sentenced to the maximum you can get in Norway, which is 21 years. Anders Breivik also received a sentence of 21 years, but I believe in my heart that the Norwegian authorities will not be allowing Mr. Breivik out
Anders
of jail.
Anders Breivik needs to stay in prison forever, thanks very much.
But that's for another day.
Well, I mean, that was, you know, interesting.
Yes, it is an interesting story. Rock music over the generations has certainly attracted lots of slightly odd people. But
we've done a few musicians, actually, haven't we? We did
The one Phil Brown suggested. Who disappeared.
Yeah.
We don't know where he went.
We did John Lennon.
And I suppose to some ways we did Charlie Manson.
He was not a musician, was he?
No, but it's the same kind of satanic...
Oh, I see what you mean.
Cult.
Culty kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose so. Bit different.
A bit different.
Well, please do feel to write to us with your suggestions anytime.
Please.
We do listen to them. And if, like Steve, I'd forgotten you, or we didn't do it, do try us again.
Yes, please do.
We can't get to everyone, so...
No.
But we do try.
And how's the Instagram gone this week? Lots of good responses?
Yes, well, as per last week, Natalie said I should try and do something that was like a bit more engaging. So I put up a post that said... Hold on, let's have a look what I did. Oh, the picture of you on Father's Day went down an absolute storm.
Oh, good-o. Crikey.
So I put up a picture saying, want to say thank you, da-da-da. And I said, what's your favourite episode of the podcast? Mine is Bible John. What's yours? And I will tell you what our listeners said. Catherine said, tough to pick one, but M6 twins.
Yes.
This person said, hard to choose, but probably spy in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
Life Happens said, the White House farm murders. John said, they're all brilliant. From Sweden. Hello, John in Sweden. Mother of Dobermans said, to be honest, although the research and content is excellent, it's more about the chemistry between the two of you.
Oh, I think that's very fair.
And also she watched La Monte, that French crime drama I've made you watch once.
Yes. We are going to do Murder in West Cork, Netflix series.
What's that?
It's an unsolved murder, or it's apparently unsolved, but everybody thinks the boyfriend did it. 3-part Netflix, starts at the end of June.
Well, look forward to that episode of the podcast.
I was written to by someone specifically this week saying you will do the Murder of West Cork, won't you?
We do try and do the things that are coming out when they come out.
Yes. That'll be current when we,
we do it.
When we do it.
Very good. Well, there we do go.
What about any good, exciting things coming up?
Oh, I did watch Mayor of Easttown.
Oh, well done.
Which I know you can't watch because you don't have Sky.
I don't.
But it is so good.
Mm.
Like, so good. And I would highly recommend anybody who has access to it. It's on Sky and HBO. So it was on Now, but I don't think it's on there anymore. Or only for a few more days. It's a Kate Winslet set outside of Philadelphia.
And she's a policewoman.
But she's got a lot of troubles in her own life also.
Well, tell me a police story where the detective doesn't have a lot of troubles.
She got a lot of troubles. It's so clever. And the casting is just off the hook good.
Well, I think that's great. I'll find a way of looking at it.
There must be a way of getting you to have a look at it. It's so excellent. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I'm still just nearly finished Big Sky, which is the last episode's next week.
You watched the Kominsky Method twice.
I watched the third series of the Kominsky Method twice, just to prove how much I loved
You'll no doubt go back to the beginning of season one and watch it all over again.
I just love it. It absolutely makes me laugh out loud. And what I love is it's cast against type, and it's just brilliantly done. It's just astounding. But I enjoyed that very much. I watched a wonderful documentary about Robert Altman, the director. Absolutely fabulous.
Where was that?
It was on Amazon, I think. Because there's going to be a retrospective of his work, some of which I couldn't get, but I love MASH or Shortcuts and lots of McCabe and Mrs. Miller. I mean, you know, lots that I like a lot. But the documentary was absolutely first rate. Beautifully done as well. So there are lots of things out there that are really good. I'm just reading the new James Ellroy, which is, if you like James Ellroy, very fast and hard moving.
And all the listeners need to watch The Beast Must Die on BritBox because my client Mia's in it.
Okay, Mia who?
Mia Tomlinson.
Mia Tomlinson.
And also Professor T, which is starting on BritBox. And then it's on BritBox and it's going on to ITV. It's got a really good slot. ITV, I think it's going to be like Sunday night, 8 o'clock. It's a new like detective series, well, kind of. It's got Ben Miller in it. But the two detectives or like the young police people in it are played by my two clients, Barney White and Emma, Naomi.
Wonderful. Well, I'm all in favour of that.
So I'm looking forward to everyone being able to watch those.
Yes, me too. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah.
Perhaps I should invest in BritBox. I don't know.
I don't know. I think I'm just going to do the free trial so I can watch The Beast Must Die.
Okay.
And wait for. I've watched most of Professor T because I got a special.
Okay.
Special access.
But I seem to have so much to catch up on that there seems so little time. There's a new BBC One true crime series starting 11 o'clock in the mornings next week or the week after. But presented by a woman I know, Sasha Wask, you see, who was Rosemary West's junior defence barrister.
No way. Amazing.
Yeah.
I need to watch, what's it, Crime? Crime Time? Time.
Crime Time?
No, Time. What's the Stephen Graham? What's the one you just watched?
Time.
Time. I need to watch that.
Yes, I liked it. I liked it. I know it's easy to, you know, but it was beautifully done and very involving too. Because it's just really a transformation. Everybody's transformed by the experience of prison, whether they're a prison officer or a prisoner. But I won't. I'm not going to spoil it. I'm not going to.
Yeah, I'll have a look at it.
Go on. I'll go on about it. Well, Mo, thank you. Thank you for thanks. Thanks for everybody.
Thank you to all the people. Thank you to our producer Sam Brain, my brother Dan who did the music, my friend George who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, and to Jeffrey for doing all the hard work, and to you the listeners for listening and for telling us what to do.
I couldn't agree more, and I particularly
we're doing very interesting cases. We would we would no way we would otherwise
we wouldn't have thought of that would be of. Absolutely true, but yes, thank you so much. It's a joy you're there, and it means a great deal to Molly and I. And as I sometimes say at the end, do be careful out there.